for a corporate client, they might have dinners or entertaining and, you know, you do that, but you come home, you may not just switch off and go to bed straight away. So in those instances, can we still put those little down-regulating strategies in place? Because essentially by doing that, you're telling our brain, okay, brain, we're getting ready to go to bed, and it starts to get familiar with all of that. So it's, yeah, I love that you've used that example, because that for sleep is something I see a lot with my corporate clients, and they have big success with creating that kind of dedicated wind-down routine that works for their life. That's not like 50s, but they also have extra strategies for when they need.
I'm Renata Bernardi, and this is the Job Hunting Podcast, where I interview experts and professionals and discuss issues that are important for job hunters and those who are working to advance their careers. So make sure that you subscribe and follow, and let's dive right in. I'm delighted to have you here, Jess. I've been interested in health and well-being and optimizing my clients' performance for a long time in a more holistic way. I think we really do sort of complement each other well. And I'm delighted to have you here to ask you lots of interesting questions. But I'd love to hear from you. How did you decide to become a dietitian in the first place?
Yeah, it all started for me when I was quite young, like 10, 11 years old is when I became interested in it. And the reason for that is because I was getting it very wrong before I learned how powerful it could be. So I was a very good swimmer growing up, all into my late teens, and swimming demands a lot of you, training before school, after school. So just trying to grasp what you need to eat for that level of training. I work with a few swimmers still, and definitely worked with a lot over the years, and they're all getting it wrong just because it's so hard to figure out the requirements and what you need. So that's really where it all started for me. And I guess I felt how amazing it was to go from being an underfueled teenager and athlete to a really well-fueled one. And I also felt how that translated to not just my physical performance, but my cognitive performance as well. So for me, the love, and, you know, I should add, I'm a foodie as well. I love food. You know, food is delicious. And I love that you can enjoy it and really use it as a tool to better every aspect of your life, which is how I see it today. It really can deliver immediately more energy, better focus, better productivity, better quality of life now. But when you get it right as well, it's also paying you like health equity credits for your future self as well. So yeah, that's how I really became in love with it. And I started working in a hospital, which was fantastic opportunity to start my career, like working in a multidisciplinary team and having a full-time role, which is quite challenging straight out of university. They nearly set you up to be like, don't expect that. It's not the norm. But me, the vision was always high-performing individuals, particularly high-performing athletes. And, yeah, spent a lot of my career there, which I loved. But as I kind of started to move more into my mid-30s, my interest started to be, well, there's a lot here that can transfer to high-performing individuals in general. And this is where this kind of holistic high-performance interest, as well as transferring a lot of the lessons and learnings and what elite athletes do so well into high-performing corporates and businesses and, you know, military and other just high-stakes, high-performing arenas and individuals.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Some people are asking, well, one person is asking for your full name. It's Jessica Spendlove, SpendLove.com. If you type that up, you will find her website, and then from there you can go to her LinkedIn and Instagram and whatnot. Jess, one of the feedback that I received was from someone that was using your tools and resources for both her daughter and for herself, and I thought that was so cool, right? That her daughter was using your resources because she's a young athlete, and the mother was using it for herself as well in different ways. And I thought that, you know, showcases the diversity of what you provide and how it can be used. With that experience as a young athlete and then understanding how you could translate that knowledge into the corporate world, which is where I operate, how do you see nutrition playing a role in the corporate professional's career success? We see that in athletes. We kind of understand that. We watch them play and, you know, perform so well. We never really think, oh, I can use some of those things. And even for me, it took me a while to understand that I could adopt some of those techniques and the discipline and nutrition. So tell me a little bit more about how we can translate that to corporate clients.
Yeah, and I love that someone's emailed saying that they use the same information that their daughter uses, because I think that's what I started to see. I started to see these big rocks, these big needle movers, which to be honest are universal. And yes, there's like some small percentage of like very sports specific, like what to eat game day or, you know, what to have during training and some supplements, but learning how to eat to perform, which that now means increase your energy, increase your focus, increase your productivity, you know, that cognitive aspect of being, optimize your brain health. You know, hopefully a lot of people listening, embarking on their own kind of fitness journey as well, whether that's starting out, whether that's trying to move more, or whether, you know, I work with some very high level corporates that are very serious about their training as well. So no matter where you kind of sit in that level, there's opportunity. And, you know, I think of things as nearly like a pyramid or a hierarchy where we've got the beginner foundation base and then we can move up. And, you know, to answer the question, I don't think people are having the conversation about how food can support you to feel. We have the conversation, food is this, carbs are this, fruits and vegetables this, but what people don't understand, which is the message I'm trying to spread, is these are the types of foods, and when you have them or when you don't have them, this is how they make you feel. And when you understand what you have and how it makes you feel, both from a positive way, but also when we don't do it, what's that disconnect? That's when people really truly start to understand. And most importantly, where a lot of people get it wrong is they listen to what someone else is doing and try to directly just do that. Whereas I'm much more like, this is the principle, this is the knowledge. So one thing which is definitely going to come up is a concept of protein pulsing, which is focusing on eating protein at each meal and snack, which a lot of people have probably maybe heard of that in terms of like gym and muscles, and that's correct. But what isn't often mentioned is when you do that. So these are foods like anything from an animal, if you eat animal products, anything derived from an animal like milk, yogurt, and cheese, and also some really great plant options like tofu, lentils, legumes, soy-based products, plant protein, etc. When you spread that out across your day, what that enables you to do is feel satisfied and sustained, which what that means at a physiological level is stable blood sugar levels. And when they're stable, your focus is stable, your ability to do deep work is improved, and we also have those big energy crashes and burns. So, yeah, I really love taking what has been used with athletes and helping people see the application to anyone in that, you know, this high-performing corporate who's really just looking to better themselves or looking for that competitive advantage as they kind of maybe look to climb the ladder or move into a different career or a different role.
Yes, I think that that's probably what surprises people the most when they're talking to me about recruitment and preparing for a job interview, or, you know, how do they look for work now that they're unemployed. The first thing I tell them to do is, okay, how are you feeling right now? You know, what is mentally from 1 to 10? And do you need a break before you go into deep diving into this? Second is, are you sleeping well? Now, you're not going to have great cognitive ability if you don't. And then how is your diet? Do you have somebody that you can go to discuss diet? Because the fact that I think the positive, the silver lining of me having so many different allergies, I have a gazillion allergies, Jessica. I cannot tell you the amount of allergies that I have, all diagnosed with patch testing and so forth. I really do understand the impact of what I eat very acutely, because once I eat gluten or I eat something with, you know, whatever it is that I'm allergic to, benzoic acid, for example, I immediately feel unwell. It's very quick. Imagine if I'm going to an interview afterwards, right? If I accidentally eat, you know, bread with gluten and 2 hours later I have an interview, my cognitive ability after eating gluten goes down the drain. And I know that now. And that's very personal, right? It's not the same for everyone. So it's so interesting to see how athletes have already understood that, incorporate that. Also in terms of the difference between being in a competition and being in training. And I think that that's important too, isn't it? Like when somebody's in competition, for me, is when they're going through, you know, job interviews, recruitment and selection, or they have a very big responsibility within their role and they're going through a big milestone, let's say a merger and an acquisition, or, you know, they're about to go into an AGM and deliver reports or go to Senate inquiries or whatever it is that, you know, my clients had to do in the past that it's acutely stressful. That's when they need to worry most. Would you agree?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that pyramid I kind of mentioned, and I only really spoke a bit about the base, but, you know, that first baseline is learning how to eat for like energy and appetite and physical and cognitive performance. And then as you move up, there's a tier, which I call the performance tier, which what you've said exactly there is that difference. Athletes, it's racing and competition. And for the corporate, it's the stressful sprints, you know, around that financial time or those big presentations. The other one I see a lot is big like speakers or people that are needing to, you know, that where there is that acute period of stress. And, you know, the thing that we know about stress, it impacts our gut. And, you know, you've mentioned your allergies, but what a lot of people, well, you know, 30% of the population suffer from irritable bowel syndrome or certain symptoms. And we know that those symptoms are exacerbated when we are stressed. And for some people that can be acute stress, like some of the examples you've mentioned. But for other corporates, it can be just that low level consistent stress that they've got in their life. Mm-hmm. It might be the role that they want to leave or change. It might be, you know, the relationships in the workplace, that toxic culture. Like there can be so many factors, and, you know, you need to understand that as much as stress impacts your gut, if you've got things going on in your gut and that's limiting, maybe like if you've got gut issues, you might not want to go for a walk or a run because you might be worried you need to find a bathroom, or you might not want to eat before a meeting because you think, oh, am I going to feel not great? But that might impact your cognitive ability. So really, like, and this is much further up the, you know, that pyramid in terms of where it sits, but that's why we need the foundations in place. We need to understand how we can use food as a tool day to day to feel our best now, and also invest in our future self as well, which the great thing, it's the same strategies. We don't have to worry about different strategies. They're the same ones that help current us and future us. But then once we do that, then we figure out those, those acute periods or those what I call high level, you know, intense periods of work, maybe a major deadline or whatever it is. And what tools do we put in place then? Because as we know, when we've got high level stress, often a lot of our habits fall by the wayside as well. So it's kind of this compounding effect, not in the way that we want it to go.
Yeah. Jessica, let's think about the sort of person that could have tapped into listening to this podcast in the future when it becomes part of the Job Hunting podcast, or is listening now. Let's say this person is a corporate professional that they have lost their jobs end of last year, which is very common, unfortunately, for companies to restructure and lay off personnel at the end of the year. Let's say it's now February, so they're starting to get concerned and anxious about not having a job and applying for roles and maybe not getting through. What would be the strategies that you would recommend that professional to adopt to have that sustainable performance in what is really very much like an ongoing competition for an athlete, isn't it? And I always use, I don't know if you've listened to me before, but I'm always talking about tennis. Like, you know, you're a tennis player, you're about to go into the Australian Open. There are lots of little competitions. You need to go through all of them. You're not going to win them at the beginning. You know, you're a bit rusty, but we're going to practice and train you, and you're going to get better and better. And eventually you are going to win your next job. What would you compliment in terms of my, you know, to my career advice? What would be your advice?
Yeah, I think the first thing is acknowledging how tricky that can be, whether, you know, you're looking for that next opportunity or you're in between roles. So, you know, really trying to flip the script and see the opportunity that currently is available for you to really invest in this space. And when I say invest, I'm talking more time and focus. You've got an opportunity to invest in you becoming the best version of yourself. And, you know, what we know is when people have, and, you know, we'll run through them, but I like to talk about them at a macro level. Like, these are the really big rocks that impact your health and your well-being, which is your nutrition, which is your sleep, and which is your movement. And we know all three of those things can be really impacted when we're in a new role, or when, again, like the demands of the role or the company that we're working in. So why not use this time to develop good habits, to learn and to adapt and put some protocols in place for yourself? So when that championship does arrive, because it is coming, because you're putting in the work, you've already elevated the baseline. You've elevated your habits. You know, we know that the brain only has the ability to change from a habit perspective, maximum three things at a time. So if we've got a new role and a new way of working and a new team and new system and all of these new things, we're certainly going to be struggling to then be implementing better practices that support ourselves with our nutrition and our sleep and our movement. So ideally, this like preparation time, I love that analogy. It's exactly what it is. It's training for the Grand Slam, you know, which you take home.
That's true. My next guest on this podcast is Mike Smith from Useverb. And he is here asking you, Jess, what about fasting? What is it that people love about fasting? So many people now are adopting shorter and shorter windows of, you know, eating. So eat from 12 to, I don't know, 6 p.m. and then fast from 6 p.m. to 12 p.m. or something like that. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I have so much to say about fasting. I actually, so I have a podcast myself, Stay at the Top, and I think it was episode 19, which is just like two episodes ago. I did an episode called To Fast or Not to Fast. I guess with myself, and I consider the types of clients I work with, it really is getting down to the individual. And how I see fasting is it's an advanced tool for an advanced user. So thinking about this pyramid, you know, the beginner stage, the intermediate performance stage, which we've talked about, fasting is the top of the pyramid with supplements. It's an advanced tool which can add value. The reason why it's so big, there's a few reasons. There is some, definitely some science supporting the longevity piece. So when we fast, telomeres, which this is an indication at how fast we're aging, is slowed down. So that's where this longevity kind of piece comes from. The other side of the coin is also from a cardiometabolic and a gut health. There's some really positive signs there. But this is where really comes back to the individual. And if I think about a lot of the clients, I kind of have two camps of clients. I've got the athletes or the CEOs or the execs or the business owners that really have an athlete mindset, and they're training intensely. So they might be doing the Ironmans, the marathons, they might be avid power lifters, that type of thing. And when you're training at a really high level, fasting isn't always going to fit with those goals. So that's where it starts to get a little bit tricky. The other camp of clients I work with is the CEOs or the execs or the business owners or the busy professionals who have prioritized their career and maybe their family. And that's just organically meant their health has dropped down there's a hierarchy. We can only prioritize so many things. Now, with these clients, fasting does have a bit of a spot, but what I never want to see fasting is as a band-aid to getting around our poor lifestyle. So if we're eating ultra processed foods, we're buying our lunch and dinners every day, we're Uber Eats' best customer, we're not moving that much, we need to have a bit of a conversation about how this is sitting in. So that's the high level version. I feel like we could do a whole dedicated episode, but it's, for me, it's a bit tricky. It's not for everyone. It definitely has a place and a space. But as I said, I like to see it as an advanced tool for an advanced user once they created the rest of it. Because if you really are applying it to your life, there can be some benefits. But if you're that kind of camp A, training a lot, you just want to make sure that you've really targeted to your goals and it's not actually undoing what you're trying to achieve there. And if you're that camp B, you just want to make sure, have I earned the right to fast? Have I, you know, progressed from my undergraduate degree to my postgrad, and am going on to the PhD to do the fasting?
Yeah, that's interesting. I listen a lot to podcasts, and I haven't listened to your episode 19 or 18, but I'll definitely go listen because I'm fascinated by fasting. And it's one of the things I wanted to ask you about as well, because it's complicated for us who haven't studied diet, you know, the high levels that you have, to listen to podcasts or in fact read books, and they seem to be contradicting each other. Not just about fasting, but about what you should eat, you know, a carnivore diet or vegetable-based diet. There's a criticism even with podcasters that invite guests on to speak, like Huberman or The Diary of a CEO. And one guest will say one thing, and then the next week, the next guest will say something different. So there's a bit of criticism to those big podcasters on, you know, what they're trying to convey to their audience and confusing the audience. Do you agree with the criticism, or are we just continuously learning about these things? And as we learn, we need to convey the message, and whatever we're learning is incrementally different from the previous research that was done.
Nutrition's hard. There's so much nuance in it. It's not black and white, because we all eat, and physiologically it's a very hard to do, you know, best quality science is randomized controlled trials. And when it comes to nutrition, like, it's very hard to do that really high, like, quality level of science. So I guess that's been part of it. I also think nutrition is really that one space where everyone feels a little bit informed and entitled to have an opinion, because we all eat, and then, like, what we eat is also underpinned by our culture and our own knowledge and how we've grown up. So there's just so much that goes into it, and I get it. It is very conflicting, and it's hard to go, who do we listen to and what is the best practice? Mm-hmm. For me, I don't know if it means I certainly don't sit on the fence. I'll definitely have an opinion. Carnivore is definitely something I don't support. I do think people can find different ways of eating that work for them. But with that, we know so much around the gut microbiome and true carnivore. I mean, this is the other thing as well. Like, people often say, I'm eating a certain way, but when you dig deep, they're not actually maybe doing the full extreme. Like, carnivore is really like, I'm eating meat and that's it. Whereas sometimes if people, you know, come into, if I'm doing a coaching program and they might have tried that, well, it's like a modified version. But I think when anything, finance, which is certainly not my area of expertise, but, you know, the get rich quick schemes, mm-hmm. the finance experts are saying that doesn't work. It's really about compounding interest, diversifying your assets and all of that. So when it comes to nutrition, I really think we need to take the same approach. We need to look at not the extreme end of the bell curves, but where do we sit in the middle? And for me, that's what I'm particularly passionate about, blending that health, that well-being, that performance. And I'll very rarely tell a client, you need to subscribe to this. But what I do is I sit down and I listen to, and I do something, it's a process called the life audit, which I'll give you the link and you can get access to it. But it's basically when I work with a coaching client, it's the first step that I take, which is a 7-day template, probably similar to a business owner or someone in the corporate world doing a time and an energy audit. But we do that with their life. We look at their nutrition, we look at their sleep, we look at their energy, we look at their cravings. But what it also allows someone to do is get off autopilot, because that's where we all live, and just become a little bit self-aware. And obviously when I'm working with them one-on-one, I can accelerate that process, but I really even believe just mapping it out and seeing the gaps and even connecting, you know, I'll give an example. I've got a client in the tech world, like CEO of this business, and one of his essential non-negotiables is a high-protein breakfast. That really has been a fundamental pillar for him to set his whole day up for success. But when we, you know, dove deep on all of that, he has four different mornings. He has mornings he drops his kids to school. He has mornings that he doesn't drop his kids to school. So they're the office days. Ooh, the balloon. He has office day. I'm sorry, he has home days. And then he has the weekend. So this is where it gets down even further, where you go, okay, well, this is what we're trying to achieve, but we need a few options that give you the same outcome, but that are going to fit for that. So I've kind of taken that question, you know, a little bit, but I guess it's nuanced. It really is anything extreme. We're looking to sit in the middle. And I'm really a big believer in helping people decode what the body and brain are telling them. And I've even done a LinkedIn post about it today for anyone listening live, which is if we can get more in tune with what I call the metrics that matter, our energy levels, how stable they are, and do they feel good or are we falling off a cliff? What is our appetite doing? Is it stable or is it ravenous, super full? Do we crave sugar often? What's our performance like in the gym or in the office from that cognitive side or physical side? And when we tune into that, that's our body trying to communicate how we're responding. And it's not just food, but food is a huge proponent of that, because what else do we do 3 to 5 times a day that we have total control over? So when we really start to like understand and listen, then we start to see the clues. So yeah, I'm anti the extremes because I just think extreme in any industry doesn't work. But where do we pull from what aligns with our belief, our philosophies, what we like and our lifestyle, and how do we blend that?
That's the great answer. And I think it leads to another question that we have from the listeners that I want to go into because it's very linked to that. But Mike's asking for the episode 19. So it is episode 19 of Stay at the Top. And if you go to Jessica's website, which is jessicaspendlove.com, you'll be able to find her podcast and other resources there. So have a look. I'll also be listening to that episode. But one of the things that came up yesterday from somebody who wanted you to answer a question for her is Donna Burr, who has been on the podcast. She has been a guest and she's a recruiter and executive search partner. And she asked a question that I really love, which is balancing optimal performance now and optimal performance for longevity. So this idea that longevity and improving your health span and lifespan is so important these days, given that we will be working, you know, for much longer than previous generations. So the optimal performance, aiding both your performance right now and aiding longevity in the long term. How do we achieve that?
Yeah, it seems good thing about what I'm about to say is I actually think, and I don't want to say it's easy because it's certainly not, but we've never had more information available to us about what helps current us and future us. And again, I don't know if it's because where I sit is really that blend of health, well-being and performance, but a lot of these principles I talk about, they consider current you and future you. So let's talk the three big pillars. We'll talk about the macro and the micro. So our macro kind of macro, really the big rocks, the big needle movers, nutrition, sleep and movement. So from a nutrition standpoint, and best place, yeah, go to the website. There's so much info, or LinkedIn, even Instagram, there's heaps there. But when we learn how, and it's something I call all the elements, which is really what makes up a meal. So I talk about four elements, which is protein to satisfy and sustain us. I talk about colors, fruits and vegetables for vitality and gut health. I talk about healthy fats, which are anti-inflammatory, also very good for cognitive well-being, and I talk about whole grain carbohydrates. Now, if we make sure those proponents are at each meal and most snacks, we're doing a pretty good job. You're the top 1% with your nutrition. The other thing about that, you'll feel increased energy, better performance, better focus now. But when you eat like that, you're also eating to minimize the risk of like disease and the, you know, the acceleration of aging, basically. We are in control of that. And nutrition is definitely the one of the biggest factors when it comes to disease development, prevention, or delay. Some of us have been dealt certain cards. Our genetics is, yes, uncontrollable factor, but there's an area called epigenetics, which is our genetics plus our lifestyle. And our lifestyle is so much more of a factor than our genetics. It's kind of like, what fuel are we adding to the fire? Are we supporting that, or are we just throwing stuff on and it's getting out of control? So I guess nutrition is definitely, when we learn to eat to perform now, cognitively, physically, energy, we're also eating for future us as well, which like that's great. The second piece, sleep. And I love that you know, that's the first or second thing you ask your clients, because it is just fundamental. It's fundamental to how you feel every single day. Getting enough, and also the quality of our sleep, which we call our sleep architecture. We've got four phases of sleep, and unfortunately, we can't rewire that. That is innate in our body, in how we operate. Now, if we are not getting enough of our deep and our REM sleep, that's where our cognitive reprocessing and clearing and removing the debris that accumulates in our brain across the day, that's where that happens. So if we're not getting enough sleep, we're not getting into those cycles because we're living off caffeine, we're stressed, we don't have a wind down routine, then we're not optimizing that. And then over like short term, we know how we feel when we're not sleeping. Like we don't feel great. We're just tired, memory, creativity, it's all blunted. But long term as well, that's when it accelerates disease progression. And particularly like cardiometabolically, yes, heart disease, some cancers, but also dementia and Alzheimer's. Like sleep is a huge factor, the amount and the quality of sleep to the progression or the onset of those mental conditions later in life. Now, the third pillar, movement, similarly, like, and the great thing, there's so much, I feel like there's so much coming out in this space at the moment, particularly around resistance training and, you know, the benefits of resistance training now, which depending on who's listening and the age, for women, and I'm not saying past this age, but women, we go through certain things, you know, more at a more distinct period in our lives than what men do, the perimenopausal phase and then the menopausal phase. So we really want to have nutrition, sleep, and movement that supports the maintenance of muscle mass. The other thing we know about muscle mass is it's becoming one of the number one markers for longevity. You know, as we age, men and women, we decrease our muscle mass. It's a process called sarcopenia, and it's just we all face it. So we need strategies in place that are going to support that if we really want to consider our longevity. Resistance training a couple of times a week is really protective. Now we feel good. We release hormones and myokines, which are great for our brain and our body and our energy and our feel-good hormones, but it lays the foundation for a better quality of life as we age. And then I guess outside of the macro space, if we look at these more micro, what daily practices do we have in place? And, you know, I come to this conversation as an expert, but also someone who identifies as a high achiever. And I have also very much suffered from the shadow side of being a high performer and being so driven. Like I've burnt myself out more than once. I've run myself totally into the ground. And, you know, this phase of my career is like blending both of those conversations. And one of the biggest like determinants when it comes to managing our energy levels and minimizing our risk of burnout are our daily micro recovery strategies. So yeah, one of the big things here is how do we set our day up? You know, are we taking, I call them brain breaks, but it's really just, are we working in a way where we have space away from our screens, away from technology and away from stimulants? Or are we just on, we're on the tech, we're on the caffeine, we're then having an afternoon pick me up because we're so tired because we haven't learnt to tune into our body and prevent that happening, and that cycle just goes on and on. So yeah, they're probably the four big spaces I like to talk about to support an individual now, but also set us up for working later into life, because we're living longer, we're wanting or needing to work for longer. So how do we do that? And I really believe holistically addressing your lifestyle to live a high performance, sustainable life, starting with your nutrition, your sleep, your movement, and these micro recovery strategies are the keys to you being able to do both of those.
I love that. I often, you know, going back to that initial discussion about the corporate professional being in competition or out of competition, I think it's so important in the way that you manage all of those pillars. And even little details, I'll tell you a short story about what happened to me this weekend. On Sunday, there's a new TV series on Apple TV, and it's sci-fi, and I love sci-fi. My husband said, let's watch it. I'm like, yeah, of course. And we watched the first episode, and it's dark. It's dark. It's something that will give me nightmares at night, right? So that series, I said, okay, we're going to stop this. And when we are on holidays, we will watch this. Yeah. But I can't watch it right now because I'm running my group coaching. I have a big, you know, two big corporate clients at the moment. I am at the brink of burnout. And I think with athletes, they know when they may burn out. It's when they are in competition. And, you know, another little snippet from this weekend was I was watching the Netflix series about the tennis players, because I love that series. And one of the tennis players is preparing for a big match. And the physio says to the coach, I don't think I'll be able to sleep tonight. And the coach says, don't say that. Don't say that close to her, because it will affect her sleep and it will affect her performance. So just noticing the things that you should be doing and shouldn't be doing when you are in high level stakes in your career is so important, because you're not going to be able to avoid them. They will just be part of a long career, right? There will be times when you will burn out or be close to burning out, or you'll be stressing your body and your mind to the limit. And it's just a matter of having those fundamentals supporting you.
Exactly. And you've brought up such a, like, part of it is just learning yourself. And often we get it like wrong before we get it right, because that's just how we learn and grow. And hopefully we can listen to things or accelerate the learning process by, you know, working with someone in that kind of capacity. But yeah, I totally relate with that. One thing I talk about is to win the day, you need to win the night, because we all sleep, and the importance and the power of sleep to just every aspect of our life. But have a wind down routine. You know, a plane doesn't just get, we don't get on the plane and we take off straight away. We get on the plane and there's the same, you know, protocols they do every single time, and we take off and then we prepare to land. Or an athlete, they do the warm up, then they train or compete, then they cool down. Why do we as high performing corporates think that we can just work and do everything and then relax by watching Netflix and then just think we're going to switch that off and go to bed? The more we can down-regulate ourselves, down-regulate our thoughts. Thoughts are the number one kind of like preventer to people getting to sleep. So that can look like different things for different people. You know, can we at least dim the lights before we go to bed? Can we have some sort of relaxation practices? That might just be having a hot shower and a skincare routine, but have something. You know, for me, I'll use an example, sleep. I feel like I'm a sleep enthusiast, but because I love how good I can feel when I sleep well, but I've never actually been a good sleeper. I used to get quite stressed being a swimmer, having to get up at 4 a.m. before school. If I didn't get enough sleep, I'd be very worked up, and that can still happen now if I've got a big presentation the next day. So in those instances, I actually dial that up, but I've figured out what works for me. So that might mean having a sauna and also having a magnesium drink and also reading a book, which are not things I do every single time. But if I'm feeling a little bit stressed or a little bit wired or worried that I'm not going to be able to go to sleep, I pull out more of the big guns from the toolkit. So for a corporate client, you know, they might have dinners or entertaining. And, you know, you do that, but you come home, you may not just switch off and go to bed straight away. So, you know, in those instances, can we still put those little down-regulating strategies in place? Because essentially by doing that, you're telling our brain, okay, brain, we're getting ready to go to bed, and it starts to get familiar with all of that. So it's, yeah, I love that you've used that example, because that for sleep is something I see a lot with my corporate clients, and they have big success with creating that kind of dedicated wind down routine that works for their life. That's not like 50s, but they also have extra strategies for when they need. Mm.
Yes, I love that. The word for 2024 for me is sleep. And I've been obsessing with sleep for years, but this year I've decided that the biggest thing I can give myself is time to sleep. You know, if LeBron James does it, and J-Lo, and Dakota Jennings, and Dakota, what's her name? The actor, they all sleep like 10, 11, 12 hours. And LeBron James is, of course, such an amazing, optimal athlete in my eyes. I just, you know, look up to him so much. And his sleep routine and the way that he recovers, you know, from injury as well by sleeping is something that I've paid attention to. And this year, it's about me giving time to sleep more if I can. And it's not easy, you know, because if you don't allocate the time, it just won't happen. You can have red lights and down lights and you know, winding down techniques, which I've also always had, Jess. But what I didn't really do up until this year is time. Give it time, you know. Start earlier, you know, getting ready to sleep. And I hadn't done that. What do you think, you know, before we go about the rest of our days, our day-to-day, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions that people, when they come to you to work with you, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions they have that you need to sort of revert?
Yeah, I think a lot of the people that come to me and people listening, they're very motivated and they're very dedicated, which often also means they can be a little bit all or nothing. And, you know, being all or nothing may have served them in certain areas of their life, but when it comes to making behavior change in areas with, like, however old you are, if you're 45, you've got 45 years of habits related to how you eat and sleep and move. So one consultation or one meal plan, and that's why I don't really offer one-off. I do coaching programs now, because it's not just addressing something while you're feeling motivated, it's implementing something into your life. And so a few of the things I'll say, one is, and I mentioned it before, just listening to the Hubermans, which look, I'm a big fan of, but we listen and we get a protocol and we just apply it to our life. But if we think of that pyramid, that might be addressing that very top layer. But what about the foundation? Like, we haven't tackled that. So first of all, that's not having an effect. And second of all, it's feeling really hard. The next thing is we just, do what other people do, which doesn't consider who we are, where we're starting from, what our goals are, what our lifestyle is, and also what we like. Like, I'm so big on people in, I believe it gets to be easier and more enjoyable than what we tell ourselves. But it only really starts when we customize something to our life, which that isn't really explored because it can't be in a podcast always. So there's that. I also think it's very much nutrition. Like you said before, like, there's the camps. I'm camp this or I'm camp that, where it's all about the nuance and often in between all of that. And I also really think it's less about the what and it's more about the why and the how. So, you know, people will say, is this a good food or a bad food? And I'm like, in relation to what? What are we, you know, so it's less about the specific individual food and it's more about that global approach. And when we learn, you know, okay, well, when we have our protein foods, I actually feel more satisfied and sustained. And the back end of the day, I've got more energy. And, oh, what do you know? I'm not raiding the pantry after dinner. When we learn that and how to do that, that's meaningful. Similarly, you know, with gut health and the microbiome and diversifying our intake there. So, yeah, I think nutrition, it really depends on the person. Like, they can come either like with all their facts and super informed, and sometimes you're busting myths. But for every single person, it's just understanding them and where they're trying to get to and why. and giving them the tools that are going to support them. And like I said, it's really helping them find that first domino that they're going to push that's going to give them the most impact, that's going to give them the most momentum. And so the rest of it pushes on, which really then can only be totally tailored to that individual. So yeah, maybe the last thing is I think they think it has to be like boring and bland and not enjoyable. That's not healthy nutrition. Nutrition is meant to be nutritious, delicious, and easy. And when you find something like that, that works. Plus it also makes you feel good. Plus it also works for your life situation. Plus it's also sustainable. That's the sweet spot.
Yeah. We have a very different question here at the end that I wanted to raise with you before we go. And it's a question about being too busy. What does Jessica have to say about when people always say, I'm too busy? What's a bad busy look like?
Busy is a word I've tried to remove from my vocabulary because it's just, I'm not going to say it's an excuse because busy is just a very individualized situation.
Can I ask you something? Because you operate in these two realms of corporate and athletes. Do athletes also say that they're busy or is it just a corporate thing?
Everyone. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're in the era of busy. So I think first thing is we try to remove that and understand like everyone's got a lot going on and there's always going to be someone doing more than you and there's always going to be someone doing less, but that's not what it's about. So maybe I'll answer this from a lens of how can in a full schedule, I'm going to call it that, how can we get the things done? And that's where I haven't really spoken about it here, but I'm really big on non-negotiables and guardrails. And you know, maybe a thing for someone with a full schedule is I move every day. On some days, depending on what that, maybe a work from home day where you don't travel and you've got more time. Well, maybe that means going to the gym or going for a walk with a friend or something. But maybe on a fuller day where you've only really got your lunch break, maybe it's just doing a quick lap around the block. So it's just having this adaptable way of working. And then I guess the next thing with food, like people are quite surprised. A lot of the clients I work with, busy corporates, I'm not necessarily advocating they go and do a whole heap of meal prep. It's kind of going, okay, well, what do you need to achieve? What's the best option? How can we do that? Because it's often about creating the habit and that support system, which potentially means we're outsourcing. Are we getting meals delivered? What day are we doing that? Are we having a reoccurring grocery shop? So it's really about finding ways to make things work. Yeah. 2024 is the busy era, but we just want to be careful with how we term that. And we also just want to set ourselves up for strategies that are going to support how full our schedule is. Because whether you're meal prepping or outsourcing it, you can still get the same outcome. And if you outsource it first, you gain more energy, you have more space in your day, then maybe you progress to that next step. So I don't, hopefully that answers the question a little bit from my opinion.
I love that, you know, and I love that the question was about what is bad busy and what's good busy, because, you know, you will have a full schedule, but like you said, you can allocate time in different ways and that are better for you and will optimize your performance. Jess, it was so wonderful having you here. We've been planning this for, you know, a few months now. So thank you so much for your time. I think that, you know, you provided such a great overview of expertise and insights, and I encourage everybody to go to your website. I mentioned it a few times. When the episode goes to air, it will be in the episode show notes, so you can click and find out more about Jess Spendlove and her podcast and her resources and her coaching programs. I think that this combination of me, you know, working with people that are going through recruitment and selection and you working on optimizing people's performance alongside, you know, whatever time they're going through in their careers is really a good combo. And I'd love to have you back. So when you have new things to say, or if you think about other topics we haven't talked about today, reach out and we will have you back for sure.
Amazing. I look forward to it. And I look forward to connecting with some new faces. And yeah, it made me feel very nice this morning when I got the email about people already kind of knowing about me in your world. So that's always nice
yes.
to hear as well, especially when they're favorable things.
You have amazing, amazing following. So thank you so much for reaching out and for accepting my invite. It was really lovely to have you. See you next time, Jess. Bye.
Good luck to all the job hunters. Bye.
Thank you.